thanks for the opportunity you gave us to introduce our model. So this is our quantum reduced loop gravity. This is a model which we are proposing to deal with the symmetric sectors of loop quantum gravity. And okay, this is quite an unusual talk because there will be two talks joined. The first I'm giving now, and the second one will be given by Manuel Esch immediately after me. So let's start. Let's go to slide number 2. This is the plan of my talk. At first, I will introduce you to inhomogeneous extension of Bianchi 1 model, which is the classical framework we are going to quantize. Then I will speak about reduced quantization. And I will point out the reason why this this framework is, does not give us a sensible dynamics. And then I will introduce you to quantum reduced loop gravity, and then Emanuele will give you all the details. So let's go to slide number 3. Okay, so let's start with this inhomogeneous extension of Bianchi 9 model. And I will try to explain you what this is. So go to slide number 4. At first, let us think of the motivation of this work. What we want to do, okay, we want to preserve more of the full loop quantum gravity structure in quantum cosmology. What does that mean more? More, it means that we want to preserve a sort of diffeomorphism invariance such that we can still regularize the Hamiltonian, the scalar constraints as in the full theory. And we're going to see how, in order to do this, we have to perform a weaker reduction of gravity space than what is usually done in homogeneous models. And so we are going to consider inhomogeneous extension. So let's go to slide number 5, when I remind you the main features of the homogeneous Bianchi line elements which are considered in standard quantum cosmological approaches. Okay, in the Bianchi spacetimes are the homogeneous spacetimes which are considered as the first generalization of a Friedman-Robertson worker metric. They are characterized by 3 main degrees of freedom. One is this function alpha of t, which is the universe volume, and it gives us the isotropic evolution. Then there are 2 other degrees of freedom which are contained inside this matrix beta. This matrix beta is a diagonal beta vanishing triple. There are only 2 components. And both alpha and beta depend only on time. The only dependence on spatial coordinates is inside this fiducial one-form omega. Omega determines the kind of Bianchi model considered, and there is the fundamental property that the external derivative of this fiducial one-form is equal to a linear combination of the external product of 2 one-forms with constant coefficients, which are these constant fields. Okay, what we are going to consider is only type A model. This is what is usually done. In type A model, we have that the constant vanish when the upper index and one of the 2 lower ones are equal. And okay, among the type A, we have the most relevant cases, which are Bianchi 1, Bianchi 2, and Bianchi 9. So let's go to slide number 6. This is the structure of the reduced free space for Bianchi homogeneous model. What we have, of course, we have that momenta are proportional to the dual vectors to the fiducial one forms, which we call you fiducial vectors. And the proportionality is via function of pi, some function pi I of p. Also the connections, so they are proportional to the fiducial one form via some function psi I of p. And these p and c are the canonically conjugate variables which one encounters to reduce free space. And let me just also point out that of course when one then carry on the quantization, for instance, the one considered in quantum cosmology, one can take some holonomies along some edges EI, where the edges EI are parallel to the vector omega I. And what it turns out is that the holonomy along these edges are determined only by one F2 generator tau I, and this would be relevant in the following, mainly for what Emanuele will tell you. So let's go to slide number 7. Okay. In slide number 7, I introduce the simplest case for Bianchi models, which is the Bianchi type 1 model, for which all the constants C vanish. And this model is described a spatially flat manifold, and so we can take some Cartesian coordinates on it, and we can define the fiducial one point simply as some delta function times the d of x, where x are the Cartesian coordinates. And the line element for the BRT1 model can be written as a diagonal line element, and we have three scale factors, so which generically are different, A1, A2, A3, and they are only functions of time. And in the BRT1 model, one can consider, for instance, some curve gamma I, this will be relevant in the following, which are curves which are parallel to the fiducial vectors omega I. And what it turns out is that this curve can simply be parameterized by only the coordinate xi, which is xi of fs being the parameter along the curve, while xj for j different from I are all constant. Then, okay, we can think to insert a lattice via this function, via this curve gamma inside the Bianchi 1 model, and it is a cubic lattice. Okay, we have face-space variables that can simply be obtained from the generic case of Bianchi model by inserting the expression of fiducial vectors and one point. So let's go to slide number 8. Okay, now here we are defining our inhomogeneous extension. What is our idea? Our idea, okay, what happens if we insert a dependence from spatial coordinates inside reduced face-space variables, which are phi I and phi I? At first, what kind of physical system we are describing in this way? We have two answers to this question. The first is a reparametrized Bianchi 1 model. We obtain this set of connections and momenta if we start from a metric in which the three scale factors are functions of t and of the corresponding Cartesian coordinate, which means A1 is a function of t and x1, A2 is a function of t and x2, and A3 is a function of t and x3. This is a fake inhomogeneous extension, since we only can make a diffeomorphism and make these scale factors to be constant in spatial coordinates. But it is exactly in the spirit of what we are doing. We want to define a weaker reduction in order to preserve some sort of symmetry at quantum level. But there's also another case which is interesting on a physical level, which is the one which describes the behavior of each Kastner epoch inside the generic cosmological solution. Okay, if you want, I can give you the details in the discussion, but which is the idea? The idea is that if the Lipschitz galactic Lipschitz conjecture holds, we have that point by point, we have some Bianchi 9 independent universes, and for each of these universes, these are independent universes, since spatial gradients are always negligible with respect to time derivatives, and what we have in the limit of this approximation, we can write some K-space coordinates, which are exactly the one of our inhomogeneous extension. So, let's go to slide number 9. Okay, here is the reduced space of the model. We have some, the moment and the connections there, which I wrote before, and even if we insert this dependence on the spatial coordinates, what we have is that these variables are still canonically conjugate, just we have to insert a three-dimensional delta function. And what about the symmetries that we are retaining, and what about the symmetry that we are grading? At first, when we fix a proper set of trias starting from a given line element, of course we are fixing the rotation, because all the trias related by a rotation are equally admissible. So when we fix a proper trias, we are saying, okay, we are fixing the group of rotation, and this implies that we are fixing the absolute group of the theory. For instance, we can write a gauge fixing condition, chi I, which is equal to the sum over L and K of epsilon I L K. Epsilon is the total antisymmetric tensor. E to AK, delta LA equal to zero. This is our gauge fixing condition on the F2D. Then, of course, since we fix also the line element, we are also restricting the admissible diffeomorphism. But in particular, we are not breaking completely the group of diffeomorphism that we can make, but we are preserving only that group of diffeomorphism which preserve the structure we assume for connections and momenta. For instance, let us concentrate on momenta. If we can define a diffeomorphism which gives us some momenta which are still of the form pi I of p and x times delta for some pi, some p, then what we find is that, okay, this is an admissible kind of transformations in our model. And these are what we call reduced diffeomorphism. But the relic symmetries, however, are clear once we perform the analysis of the constraints. And this is what I'm going to do now. So let's go to slide number 10. Okay, what are the relic constraints that we have in our reduced space? From the absolute output range, we have that this U1i output range. We have the condition gi, which is equal to the derivative with respect to xi of pi equal to 0. It's worth noting that these indexes I are not summed. And so this condition, of course, if you are considering an homogeneous model, vanishes. But here it does not vanish, of course. And how can we think of this condition? Okay, let us suppose to restrict to a given curve gamma I. Here that xi is the coordinate along this curve. And so we can see this gi equal to 0 simply as the generator of u1, this transformation along this curve. So what we have is that we can think of ci and pi as the connections and the momenta of a u1 gauge theory on each gamma I, on each curve of this kind. Let's take a look at the picture. So what we have, you can insert a collection of curves of the kind 1, gamma 1, gamma prime 1, gamma prime prime 1. And we have that along this curve, we have the we have a U1 gauge theory. And the U1 is the same for all the curves. Then let us consider a collection of curves of the kind 2. So gamma 2, gamma 2 prime, gamma 2 prime prime. OK, we have another U1 gauge theory, and we call it U1 2. And it's the same U1 for all the curves of the kind 2, but it's different with respect to the U1 associated with the curve gamma 1. And these two U1s are also independent because the Poisson bracket of gi and gj, or I different from j, is equal to 0. So by varying I, what we get is our three independent U1 groups. So let's go to slide 11. Okay, in slide 11, what we have is the reduced diffeomorphism. This V I is simply the relic of the original vector constraint. And again, how does it act? Okay, let us consider a given curve gamma k. What we have is that the action of this operator Vi can be seen as the infinitesimal transformation of this kind, x prime I equal to xi plus xi, where xi is the infinitesimal parameter. And this infinitesimal parameter, which in the case of a generic diffeomorphism is a generic function of all the spatial coordinates, is now only a function of the associated coordinate xi. Okay, what does this kind of transformation mean? Of course, let us take, for instance, an edge U1 along with the direction omega 1. We have that a reduced diffeomorphism acts in this way. Okay, let us make, first of all, the transformation x prime 1 equal to x1 plus x1 of x1 for the edge U1. But okay, this is a generic diffeomorphism along the direction 1. But if we make instead a transformation x prime 2 equal to x2 plus x2 of x2, but x2 is constant along U1, so this is nothing less than a rigid translation along the direction 2. So what we have at the end is that the reduced diffeomorphism can be seen as the composition of a generic diffeomorphism along the direction I of the edge EI we are considering, times a rigid translation along the other direction. And by the way, this kind of transformations only preserve the structure of the edge EI, in the sense that if we make a transformation of an edge EI, it generically will be another edge E prime, but still of the kind I. So let's go to slide 12. Okay, let's start speaking about what is reduced quantization of this system. So let's go to slide 13. Okay, what we have seen is that our variables describe connections and momenta associated with some U1 gauge theories. So let us define the U1 holonomies over the proper edges, EI. And let us consider some graphs, which we call reduced graphs, which are graphs made only of edges of the kind EI. Of course, we can define the fluxes across the dual surfaces to the edges EI, and we call these kind of surfaces SI. So we have holonomies, we have fluxes. Let us quantize the associated algebra, and let us define the kinematical hyperspace. Okay, the kinematical hyperspace can be written as the direct sum over reduced graph gamma of some h of gamma, where this h of gamma are the direct product over I of the direct product over all the edge EI belonging gamma of the space of square integrable U1i function with the R measure, with the proper R measure. So let's go to slide number 14, where, okay, there is a generic state of this theory. The generic state is the direct product over I of the direct product over E of I belonging to the reducer graph gamma of some object psi over EI, which are functions of U1i group elements. So we can expand them in U1i reducible representations, and we get the basis of this state, which are U1i networks. So what we have, we have this reduced graph, which is made of edges of the kind EI. For each of these for each edge of the kind EI, we have associated a U1 quantum number, a U1i quantum number. And, it's worth noting that we do not have a U1 to the third theory. We have just only one U1 quantum number associated with each edge. Just what we have is that the kind of U or U1 we are considering depends on the direction of the edge. What's happening here. Then we can define momenta, and what we have is that, okay, they act as the invariant vector fields associated with this U1 i. So momenta is mirrored along the proper two spaces, Fi. So let's go to slide number 15. Okay, let us start to analyze the implications of the kinematical constraints on a quantum level in reduced quantization. We know that, okay, we have the U1i Gauss constraints. They generate U1i Gauss transformations such that each group element based at an edge EI will change with a group element at the starting point and another group element at the ending point of the edge. And so when you want to define a projection to the U1i Gauss invariant field space, we have to integrate over this U1 quantum number, and integrate the action of the Gauss constraint. But what we have is that since the U1i gauge groups are all independent of each other, what happens is that the interfinite of this theory are simply the direct product of the interfinites for each of the edge of the gauge of the U1i gauge theory. This means that if we have a vertex, we have that each edge, for instance, of the kind one, fits only which edges of which other edges, but still of the kind one. So for instance, in picture we have E1, which sticks only with the E1 prime, and the same for 2 and for 3. So what we have at the end, we have simply that we must find the invariant U1i intertwiners among two edges. So they are simply the conditions that the U1i quantum numbers associated with the two edges should be the same. So at the end, what we have is that the requirement of U1i gauge invariance tells us that along the given curve gamma I, the U1i quantum numbers is constant. And for instance, we cannot have some an edge which starts at one point and then ends, since this is not U1i gauge invariant. So let's go to slide number 16, where, okay, we analyze reduced diffeomorphism. Okay, the action of reduced diffeomorphism seems to modify our lattice structure, but we can define in various states as in full theory. Simply we have to define, instead of S naught, reduced S naught as equivalence class of graphs under reduced diffeomorphism, and then going to the dual, we can give a precise meaning to this sum over equivalence class of graphs, and so we can simply implement reduced diffeomorphism in variance as in full theory. So let's go to slide number 17, but the point is, can we implement the dynamics? And when we think of the dynamics of this theory, we think to apply some sort of Dirac prescription for the quantization of the scalar constraint in reduced quantization. And the answer is no. And the answer is no because we know that if we are applying some sort of Simon construction, we must define the curvature operator, and which is defined via the holonomies along a closed loop. But here, the holonomies along a closed loop is not an element of our U1i gauge invariant Hilbert space, and this, for instance, can be seen because if we attach it to a state which is the U1i gauge invariant, so for which the U1i quantum numbers are preserved along a given direction, what we have is that, okay, it takes out this state from the U1i gauge invariant Hilbert. So what we have is that we cannot implement the dynamics in this setting. And the drawback of this formulation is the absence of a real three-dimensional vertex structure. Because what happens in full theory is that, okay, we have an interplay between the quantum numbers associated with edges along different directions. And so what we are looking for is a non-trivial interplay between U1i and U1 numbers, and we are looking for it through the truncation of the full theory. So let's go to slide number 18. Okay, I will now give you an introduction to quantum resistor gravity. Okay, slide number 19. The proposal. What is the proposal? What we have seen till now is, let's say, the upper and right part of this diagram. We started from the first phase of gravity. We define the reduced phase space structure theory, and then we quantize the resulting variables, and we find our nice silver case in terms of the square integrable functions of the U1i group elements. Okay, what happens if we try to follow the other way, which means if we quantize the full theory, so we start from loop quantum gravity, full loop quantum gravity, and we try to implement somehow a reduction such that we can infer the same kinematics as the reduced model, but maybe some difference with respect to the imposition of constraints. So let's go to slide number 20. So what is the methodology we are following in developing this quantum reduced loop gravity? We want to define a truncation of the full loop quantum gravity hyperspace in order to get two main points. So the same lattice structure as in reduced quantization. And this means that we have to project to reduce the graph, so the graph having only edges of the kind EI. And we will see in a while that this implies simply that we are restricting from generality to reduce the system of it. And then the point two, which is the most interesting, is how can we implement somehow a reduction from SU2 to U1 group element. And Emanuele will show you how this will give a non-trivial vertex structure. So let's go to slide number 21, where I will discuss the point one. Okay, what we have to do, okay, we have to reduce from generic graph to reduced graph. So what is the idea? Okay, let's simply define a projector, which is the identity if it acts on group elements based at some edges which are of the kind EI for some I, and which otherwise it vanishes. Okay, this projector, of course, is able to, starting from a generic graph, to give us a graph which is only a reduced graph, so in that what is interesting for us. But via this projector, we also can project down the action of generic diffeomorphism. And in particular, what we find is that the projection of a generic diffeomorphism is simply a reduced diffeomorphism. This means that the truncation of admissible edges restricts the class of admissible diffeomorphism only to reduce the one. And this is a good point, because this means that we can develop invariant states as a reduced quantization by summing over reduced one. So let me go to the conclusions, which are partial conclusions, because Emanuele will tell you the rest of the story. So let's go to slide 22. Okay, I will show you how we can implement the reduced quantization of the homogeneous extension of the Anki-Wine model. We define an hyperspace in terms of square integrable functions of U1i group elements. And we have seen how to implement kinematical constraints. We can do, there is no problem. We have U1 gauge invariant, which is implemented via invariant intertwiners, and reduced diffeon invariant, which is implemented via reduced S0. Then, as for the dynamics, we have seen how the Zeeman prescription does not work simply because we cannot define closed loops. And so we decide, okay, let's look for a truncation of the full theory which can give us something interesting for our model. And so we focused our attention on quantum reduced loop gravity. We have seen how the truncation to reduced graphs give us precisely the kind of symmetries we found in reduced quantization, which are reduced diffeomorphism. What has to be done now is to implement the reduction from SU2 to U1i elements, and this is the main subject of Emanuele's work. Thanks. And
okay, it's Emanuele from Warsaw. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Emanuele, ti sentiamo.
Okay, grazie. So sorry for the voice. I'm sick, obviously. the voice is not perfect. So let's start with the second part. In this second part, Francesco focused on the classical reduction and then quantization. So on this reduced model. We have seen that there are some difficulties, particularly if you want to implement some kind of Tiemann dynamics in this setting. So in this second part of the talk, we will instead assume loop quantum gravity as the quantum theory and try to implement at the quantum level the same kind of symmetry reduction that Francesco showed you, but directly on the SU2 kinematical interface of the full theory. So let's go to slide number two. This is just a quick summary. So I will try to define a reduction of the kinematical interface that is suitable to describe our cosmological model. And on this reduced kinematical interface, we will then try to implement all the remaining constraints of general relativity. And in particular, in the last part, we will also see some unpublished work in which we also try to analyze the semi-classical limit of this theory. So let's go to slide number three. Sorry. So what we want to do is to take the classical reduction that Francesco showed you, that is given by these A and E written in terms of those reduced variables C and P in those Poisson brackets, and look at the three equations in the blue box as constraints to be implemented in the full kinematical hyperspace. So how can we do that? So we are in the full theory. We have the cylindrical the SQ cylindrical functions with the SQ measure, and we want to construct in any case a kind of holonomy flux algebra on which can be imposed this restriction. So to do this, we make a first truncation of the theory. We just consider holonomies that are a long course that we call edge EI, that are parallel to the fiducial vectors dual to the one form of the Bianchi model. So this is the first truncation. We are just considering holonomies along those directions. Now, if we look at the first relation, that is A in terms of C, what would mean implementing this condition on the holonomies? It would mean that we have these capital R holonomies that are now again SQ holonomies, but are particular holonomies. Why particular? Because that are the SQ holonomies that are just generated by the tau I generator in the direction corresponding to the tangent vector to the curve EI that we are considering. So that are just, as you look at the last equation, that are just a particular holonomy that belong to the U1 subgroup generated by the single generator tau I. So this is a classical expression. We would like to have some states in the theory that implement this kind of condition. So let's go to slide number four. So this is the restriction on the holonomies, the corresponding restriction on the fluxes would be that we consider just fluxes across surfaces with normal vectors parallel to the fiducial ones, so like in the picture. At this point, the previous relation in the blue box corresponding to the reduction of the fluxes of the E would imply on the fluxes this condition in which we see that let's look at the EI, SK as a matrix in terms of the indexes I and K. If it's consistent with the previous Poisson brackets and with the classical reduction, this should behave as a diagonal matrix, given by this delta Ki, in which that produces the corresponding P variable, the one of the reduction. So those are the condition of on the holonomies, so to be of the reduced form, the one generated by the U1 subgroup generated by the single generator tau I, and the fluxes being of this kind are the two classical conditions that would allow to impose the symmetry reduction. And we want to look at these two conditions as quantum conditions to be imposed on the space. Sorry. So, how to do that? Well, the first simple thing is to look at Pi, Sk as a matrix, as I told you, and asking that this matrix should be diagonal. This can be done imposing this chi I condition, this equivalent to the one Francesco showed you for the reduced quantization. And the point is that this is a second class constraint with the Gauss constraint. So let's go to slide number 5. We would maybe succeed in our quantum reduction if we could impose on the quantum state a reduction of the orbits of the kind I showed you, and and consistently impose this second class constraint I equal to 0. So how can we do that? At the quantum level, okay, we just copied from the info models, and we implemented the same kind of procedure that is used in the info model to implement the specific constraints. And how? Well, quickly, selecting a subspace of the hyperspace that we call physical hyperspace, where the second class constraint is satisfied weakly. So how to do that? We can do that as they did. So KIA is not a SU2 gauge invariant, so we can take a master constraint that extracts the SU2 gauge invariant part of the second class constraint, and this is chi square constraint. When and we can impose this strongly on the holonomies, and this constraint imposes strongly on the holonomies corresponds to the last equation, in which we see that essentially we will have a relation between the tau square, so the Casimir, and the single generators in the direction I. Now, there's an interplay, as we see from this equation, between the internal direction given by the index I, the internal direction inside SQ, and the tangent space on which the holonomy along the curve EI live. So, can we implement this condition on the holonomy? If we could be on the space, if we could be able to do this, we would have imposed the constraint strongly. So, to deal with that, it's useful to introduce, because it will also be relevant in the following slides. It's better to introduce that to people in space, so please go to slide 6. Okay, we use SU2 coherent states. Those states are just the standard SU2 coherent states for SU2, are nothing else than the maximum spin projection normally in the direction Z, so the JJ cat, that is now rotated by a Wiener matrix in an arbitrary direction U. So this means that there are just maximum spin, maximum projection of the spin in the direction U. Now, we want to impose this master constraint condition on the space of the full theory. The space of the space of the space of the full theory is given by the Wiener matrices with generic index, let's say, M and N. We just project the Wiener matrices in the second equation. The Wiener matrices DJ of G, where G is an SU2 group element, so a group element of the full theory, and we project it on the SU2 coherent state basis, and we see that the chi-square condition is nothing else that reading the Casimir, so giving this J times J plus 1 when acting on the Wiener matrix, is giving the Casimir minus the part that is the scalar product between the generators and the tangent vector EI. Now we see, using the properties Segura states that this relation, if we synchronize the direction of the coherent state with the direction EI proper of the holonomy, proper of the holonomy EI, the tangent vector EI zero, we see that this condition can be, type wave goes to zero, can be satisfied at least up to S Planck correction. Sorry. So what we see is that we can have some implementation of type square equal to zero on generic basis elements if we select particular basis elements. Which basis element? The one projected on the maximum spin in the direction EI. So we will have three different basis elements, one for each direction. So we have three EI in our theory corresponding to the three vectors equal to the one form of the Bianchi model. So please go to slide number 7. So with this, we have seen that we can select particular basis elements that satisfy the master constraint strongly. This is still not enough because our reduction, as we said, should implement at the same time the reduction to chi equal to zero. And a restriction on the holonomy. So what kind of quantum state should we consider? We should consider somehow functionals that are just determined by the restriction to the U1 subgroup generated exactly by the generator tau I that corresponds to the direction of the tangent vector to the curve EI. Sorry. So how can we do that? Okay, there's a natural language to do this, and we again copied from SpinForm, and this language is the one of projected spin networks, and in particular is very useful the Dupuy-Levin map that in the SpinForm context is used to lift up SQ spin network inside SQ4 or SLQC. In our case, we just want to use it to lift up U1 functions inside the CPU. Which U1? Each time the U1 that corresponds to the correct direction. So with this method we can define the psi tilde of G functions that are SU2 function, G is an SU2 group element, that are just given by the integration over U1 of a kernel, this K, G of H, that takes the size H, where H is a U1 group element, and lifts it inside the CPU. Now, what is this kernel? This kernel is essentially the product of states, one in U1 and the other in SU2, that somehow reinforce a relation between the SU2 quantum numbers and the U1 quantum numbers in such a way that we can have the fundamental beautiful properties of those projected spin network with the Dupuy-Levin map, that is a sort of analytic condition in which essentially we have SU2 states that are, if you restrict them to the G group element, if you restrict it to their U1 subgroup, you discover that the function is completely determined by the its restriction to this U1 subgroup. So please go to slide number 8. So we see that with this tool, we made a major step towards implementing at the quantum level the classical restriction that I showed you at the beginning, the exponentiated version of the classical reduction of the Hassinger connection just in terms of C. Sorry. Because in this way, look at this psi tilde of G that that are different for each direction EI, we have particular SQ2 functions that are completely generated by the restriction to the U1 subgroup in the direction tau I. Now, these functions are also beautiful, the beautiful property of having the SQ2 quantum number, this J of n, related to the U1 quantum number, the n is the U1 quantum number in this notation, that depends on the direction EI. Now, these functions are still, let's say, unphysical. They became physical when we asked them to also satisfy the master constraint that I showed you before. And the relation at this point is easy. The master constraint is just selecting, let's say, the physics of the state. So is forcing a particular relation between the SU2 quantum number and the U1 quantum number that is given by the in this blue box. Just as J of N is the modulus of N. So those particular functions now are the one that satisfy the master constraint if we select the degree of the map. It's called degree of the map in the Dupuylian language, the relation between the quantum numbers of the bigger and the subgroup, of the group and the subgroup. So if we select the degree of the map, we have states that satisfy the master constraint strongly, that are generated by the restriction to the single generator tau I corresponding to the direction AI, and for free, the strong quadratic condition given by the master constraint also implies the linear one weakly. And so if we compute, if we look at the last equation here in slide 8, we see that the state also satisfies the classical reduction that we were looking for. So let's go to slide number 9. So we see that we have now quantum states that are associated with the edge EI that are entirely determined by their projection to the subspace with maximum magnetic number along the internal direction EI. Sorry. The states are such that they are completely determined by the restriction to the U1 subgroup in that direction. And when you restrict them to this subgroup, they behave as the U1 functionals of the reduced quantization that and classically this corresponds to this HR that I showed you at the beginning, but that are still SU2 functions. On those SU2 functions, when you act with SU2 classes, so inserting the normal tau generator as you would do with the normal SU2 fluxing acting on holonomies, you discover that the fluxes behave as U1 left invariant vector field, just reading the J of the representation that now corresponds to the N of the representation, so to the U1 quantum number. So this is exactly how we find in the SU2 quantum theory the classical reduction that is here in the last line of slide 9, in which we have states that at the quantum level correspond to the holonomized version of the first equation regarding A, that behave as fluxes corresponding to U1 left invariant vector field, so implementing the Poisson bracket of the reduced theory. But those are states in the full theory, are particular states, particular CQ cylindrical function that have these properties. Now let's go to slide number 10. This is for those of you familiar with the spin form quantization. What we did is nothing else that you have the spin form on the left and our theory on the right, just to see how, just to show you how we match the same procedure. So in the spin form case, you have a SU3 basis element. In our case, we have SU2 basis element. So these are the bigger kinematically interface case. Then you use in the second line, you use the Dupuy-Levin map to select particular SU3 function or SU2 function in our case that are determined by the restriction by a restriction to a particular subgroup, MSU2 subgroup in the CLTC case, a U1 subgroup in the U1 case, which subgroup, the subgroup such that you can then implement in the third line the implicit constraint in the CLTC case and the vanishing of the linear CLTC constraint in the CLTC case and the vanishing of the generators that do not correspond to the EI direction in our case. Now, how do you implement this? Forcing a relation, imposing a master constraint equation that in the CLTC case is still not enough to implement to completely determine the SLTC quantum numbers in terms of the CQ1, but in our case it's enough, and also imply that the linear constraint that is weakly imposed, while in the SLTC case you have to impose it. So just to conclude, the last line of equation 10 is the is fundamental because this is telling you what are the basic elements of the reduced space. Well, in the SLTC case, this is telling you that there are particular functions that belong to the, let's call K this subspace where the linear simplicity constraint are weakly. What is this space? Well, this is a state of function that is able to do what you cannot do otherwise in our low quantum gravity formulation in terms of holonomics, that is namely forcing a relation between the SLTC generators. You impose a relation between the SLTC, the elements of the SLTC connection. In the SLTC case, which relation? The one that is telling you that the SLTC connection is nothing else than the Hasselbalch connection. And in our case, it's forcing the SLTC connection using the relation between the generators to be of which kind? To be of the reduced kind. Okay, so let's go to slide number 11. Now, we are ready. Because if we define a projector on physical reduced space that is nothing else that acting on the whole cinematic reduced space of low quantum gravity and is selecting just the space that every graph that with the cubical structure that we were looking for and with space that belongs to the SQ subspace where our constraints condition holds weakly, so of the form given in the last line, we are now ready to implement the constraints of GR. So let's go to slide number 12. So how can we implement the constraints? Well, the Gauss constraints, we project everything in our quantum reduced kinematic reduced space. So we know that the Gauss constraints normally is implemented by this group averaging procedure and produce these spin networks with intertwined even by this red dot SQQ intertwined attached to a SQQ holonomic summing over the magnetic indexes. If we project the projector, we find in slide 13 that we can implement in the reduced space the Gauss constraints. Sorry, and we end up with reduced space that are again the one that satisfy the constraint as I showed you before. So namely with holonomy projected on the maximum spin direction depending on the link EI to which they belong, but also the intertwiner are projected on the maximum spin in that direction. So what are those intertwiners? Well, they are nothing else but the projection on the intertwiner basis of the living speciale intertwiner, so again, input from spin forms. And in this way, we end up with this last picture in slide 13, in which we have those reduced holonomy, those arrows, both with arrows that are the holonomy projected on the maximum spin, with reduced intertwiner. So we see now that we have a graph, even if only of this reduced kind, with holonomies, with arbitrary spins, and also intertwiners. So let's go to slide 14. In slide 14, we start to see how the theory should appear. So mainly we have the graph, like in the good theory, only not general graphs are allowed, but only those that respect the one-form problem of the Bianchi model that we are considering. But we have links with pins and intertwiner, only everything is reduced in the reduced sense that I showed you before. Now, the intertwiner can take into account four anisotropies, and the different pins can take into account for the intertwiners can take into account the inhomogeneities of the theory, while the different things can take into account the anisotropy. So if we imagine, for example, all the intertwiners equal, we still have the freedom of having three different J's attached to the three independent directions, and that would give us the homogeneous and anisotropic sector, or we can set everything equal, and that would be the homogeneous and anisotropic sector of the theory. So let's go to slide number 15. So our theory, we are in a reduced full theory, let's say, because we have implemented the gap constraint. What about the constraint? Well, we implement it as in the full theory, using S not space, but just using the reduced S not that Francesco showed you before, that just develop this cubical structure. So we can deform it, we have all the diffeomorphism, but we are only in the reduced space, so we can only use this kind of graph. So let's go to slide 16. This is now the last constraint, the one where we were blocked with the reduced quantization, now can be treated because we have our quantum reduction, because we could compute the H and project it in the complete, in the our quantum reduced kinematic Hilbert space. This is difficult, because we want to be able to compute the complete Hamiltonian and then project. So what we did for the moment is just to define the Hamiltonian, which Hamiltonian, Feynman Hamiltonian, given by Lorentz, Feynman trick, and in arbitrary representation M. We just define it using only the elements of the reduced space. Now, what's the action of this Hamiltonian on our quantum space? Let's go to slide number 17. Now, you can compute the action of the operator and we did it on three valid nodes. It's interesting that even if this is a reduced setting, the Hamiltonian acts like a Feynman Hamiltonian, so doing all the things that the Hamiltonian does normally, namely attaching three loops due to the regularization of the curvature and changing the spins and the intertwiner. But so you need the same kind of calculation that you have to do in the complete theory. They are only simplified by the fact that each time you are on the maximum spin, so using all your reduced space, you have, let's say, less sense. But those are the A, I, J. Those are exactly of the same kind of the calculation of the full theory. Let's go to equation 18. Here we have an example. The point is that so you have all the checks that normally you would have recoupling all over this, but that are simplified because there are no sums involved being on the maximum spin. Also, the other enormous simplification is that using the reduced Hamiltonian on the reduced space, the volume is diagonal. So with this volume diagonal, the matrix elements became exactly computable. For example, here is the expression on the trivalent node, and it's very interesting that if we fix M equal to 1, where M is the arbitrary spin that you can choose to regularize the Hamiltonian, and you look for large spin number, you obtain this expression, namely ji plus jj over jk times that 1 plus cosine, where that cosine is the dihedral angle between the direction I and j, so the Hamiltonian seems now to know explicitly the quantum geometry underlying the graph. But can we say more? Let's go to slide number 19. Well, we can say more because with those expressions, if we just think to the large J limit, Ji look at one of those, at the first coefficient, for example, attached to the three different tapes with different loops attached. So the Ji plus Jj over Jk for large J would essentially go to some constant. The one plus cosine is just a number, so the scaling of the first term would be 1 over jk. Now, 1 over jk, remember that j now are nothing else than the one two number associated to the p, so jk is pk, so the direction 3 would be p by p3. And but also we have a different thing, let's say, with the loop attached. In that loop, it contains the information about the curve, so that P1 plus P2, so the quantum equation in the large limit is exactly P1 plus P2 over P3 plus the permutation, so what the classical solution of the Yang-Si model should do. Okay, this is still not enough. Let's go to the unpublished work in slide 20. So what we did is, okay, but we want to test the semi-classical model. The semi-classical behavior is not just given by large J. How can we do that? Well, a way is using properly defined coherent states. So we took the coherent states of the full theory. Those coherent states are nothing else than the one based on the Higgs kernel introduced by Al Tiemann and other people working on that. And those states, yes, no, okay, those states are arbitrary coherent states, the coherent states of the full theory. Let's go, you can project them on this square page. Let's go to slide number 21. Those states have a nice property of being described in some approximation due to the work of Bianchi, Maler, and Pellini by Gaussians, and it is the sign Tertoire, so they exactly fit our setting, and they also tell us something about the relation between twisted geometry, for example, but they are essentially Gaussian coded picked around day zero, that goes in the geometry, and with a base that goes the extensive curve, which is namely K, that is C in our edited model. So we end up with the slide 21, that if we take both states and we consider a projection of those states in our reduced Hilbert space, and we build a semi-classical cell around a single cell of our model, if we try to compute the expectation value of our reduced Hamiltonian on those complete coherent states, what we find is at the end of equation 22, namely the classical Bianchi Hamiltonian. And this is true up to 1 over J0 correction, where J corresponds to P. So at the first order, the model describes for a single cell Bianchi model. So let's go to slide 23, and we have just the first step. We think that this is an interesting model for allow also to study explicitly the solution and eventually find the ideal scalar product. And what we want to do is as much as see what's happened, so investigate the presence of these bounds, but this is a setting for homogeneous space where the whole Hilbert program, say the canonical program in general, can be Hamiltonian, and the canonical program can be applied. So we could also find quantum theory and quantum space time. Then we obviously want to understand the link between our model and quantum cosmology and from cosmology, but we are aware that it could be also something different at the moment, because for example the space factors are related for example to the J, and for each cell the J's are related by Clebsch-Gordan conditions, so it's something that you don't see at the classical level of real space, but at the pure quantum level may be relation that some the fact that the same factors in Knox experiment. But in general, we think that this is an interesting model because it can be an arena for the canonical theory when we can explore the link with algebraic quantum gravity as master constraints or as master try to deparametrize it. But in this reduced setting, the theory is interesting for us because it's possible. Thank you.
Questions? Any questions? Okay, if there are no questions, let's thank the speakers again.